Welcome to the Love is the Answer podcast. Do you dream of the world being a better place? Do you wonder what you can do about it? Sweet! That's exactly what I'm trying to do. Let's change the world by transforming ourselves. Greetings, beings of love. I'm going to talk a little bit about how expectations or our mind can be the source of our suffering. I've covered this topic some already in some YouTube videos that I have on the website, and I will include the link to those videos in the show notes. It's been quite a long time since I made those videos or watched them, so I don't recall if I got into the concept of attachment much in that discussion, but I'm going to go into that much more in detail right now. So I'm going to break down each of those parts. Let's just start with the idea of expectations. There's a certain point in time where we can't help but have expectations. And I'm not sure that these kinds of expectations are actually a problem for us. For example, I expect that the sun is going to rise tomorrow. And there's a lot of data and evidence that suggests that that is very highly likely to happen. A knowing that something that is reliable and consistent and highly probable is not necessarily a problematic type of expectation. Now, if when I woke up tomorrow, the sun had exploded and destroyed the earth, it would be a big problem. But I wouldn't be around to really have to worry about it. The problem with expectation starts to come up more when the probability of the thing that we're expecting to happen is far less than the near 100% expectation that I have regarding the sun. If we can hold an expectation as a simple logical fact, that doesn't even necessarily have to be a problem. So if we're just aware of the statistical probability of an event, and we don't have emotions invested in that outcome, that won't necessarily cause us to have any suffering. The problem arises when our emotions get involved. And this is where we talk about the idea of attachment. Attachment in this case also refers to clinging and grasping. This happens when we prefer one particular outcome to a situation over others. Let's say you've just taken your final exam in a course that you've been struggling with throughout the semester, and your final is going to determine whether or not you pass the class. And let's up the ante and say whether or not you graduate that semester. It's probably going to be pretty difficult for you to not have some emotional investment or attachment to the outcome of that test. But why? After all, it is just one test. One of the reasons why we become so attached to particular outcomes is because of all of the other things that we add on in association with that outcome. So a person could decide that if they fail that test and are unable to graduate that semester, that that's going to have a chain reaction to ruin the rest of their life. They might start to think, well, I'll never graduate, or I'll never find a job, or my parents won't forgive me, they won't see me in the same way, they'll think that I'm irresponsible, or they might think that I'm not bright enough. A person could end up adding consequence after consequence after consequence until they look at this one test as the determinant of their future happiness. That's a whole lot of attachment. And maybe even some of that is true. Maybe they miss out on an opportunity because they didn't graduate earlier. Maybe their parents really are frustrated or disappointed in them temporarily. The likelihood that all of the potential consequences that they're associating with this one small event actually occurring is very low. If a person has that kind of attachment to the outcome of a test, how do you think they're going to feel after having taken it? Do you think that they might be anxious or on edge? Do you think that they may have intrusive thoughts, wondering about their performance and feeling a need to know right away how it turned out? How's that going to affect their ability to engage in other activities in life? Might they find that it's harder to spend time with friends and enjoy a conversation with someone because these doubts are popping into their head? And what if they do fail the test? How are they likely to react then? You'll probably feel very anxious and disappointed, and maybe even reach the point of feeling quite depressed about the situation. Because remember, from your perspective, the entire rest of your life has now been compromised by this one outcome. In some cases, these emotional reactions can become so overwhelming that the person has a hard time being able to go back and finish that last class. They might feel so anxious about the potential of failing once again that those feelings cause them to procrastinate registering for the class or studying once they're enrolled in it. They might find that they have more difficulty focusing on the class and actually learning the material while they're there. Or perhaps they become so depressed that they sleep in and don't even go. Of course, the more extreme outcomes are not as typical, but I've definitely seen them happen with some of the clients that I've worked with over the years. Unless you're a fully enlightened being, I'm going to assume that you've probably engaged in this type of thought process in reaction to something in your life. For someone else, it might be clinging to a relationship that's not really working because of fear of what will happen to your life or what it will mean about you if that relationship doesn't work out. It could also be believing that you need to attain a certain status or level in your career, or even be able to be successful in a certain type of career in order to be happy and fulfilled in your life. And this type of attachment can also occur for our possessions, whether it's something that we already own or something that we desire to possess. How would you feel if you came home to see that your house was robbed and that all of your electronics or jewelry or other expensive items had been taken? Our expectations cause us to believe that these things are the root of our happiness or satisfaction in life. And it's not to say that we don't actually experience pleasure in some of these instances. People might really be excited and enjoy their brand new state-of-the-art TV when they first get it. Or if our friend from before passed that test, I'm sure that there would be some feelings of excitement about graduating and moving on to the next phase of life. I'm not proposing that we don't have any of these emotions. I think that would be a really unrealistic thing to expect of most of us. But I do think that it's important that we hold these things lightly. The problem comes more when my brand new state-of-the-art TV makes me over the moon and it's all I can think about and all I can talk about for the next week. And all I want to do is invite people over to my house to show them how cool it is. That level of attachment to something that's temporary sets us up for inevitable disappointment or suffering. What would happen if the kids or the dog accidentally broke the TV? Or just eventually became not so state of the art? Through the passage of time. Even when the things that we attach to work out in our favor, they are temporary. Everything is temporary. So we're much better off if we can have the root of our peace and joy and satisfaction in life come from something else. it would work to our favor if that something was permanent. Just like my example at the beginning with the sun, that's something that at least in our lifetime we can expect to be permanent. Our consciousness is something that we can expect to be around throughout our entire life. And that may be a much better place to focus our attention. This is not to say that we can't or don't experience attachment within ourselves. We can easily attach to certain feeling states. When we experience joy or excitement or love, we can cling to those feelings. We try to hold on to them as though they're better states than other experiences. We prefer those emotions over sadness, anxiety, or anger. And because we believe that they're better, we're much more likely to become attached to them and the things or situations in our lives that we believe create them. You may ask, well, what's the alternative? Great question. Let's get into that. Let's return to our friend who's freaking out about his final exam. And imagine a different way of being or thinking about his situation. What if he held the belief that everything would be okay, even if he failed the test? Just after he completed the exam, how might his thoughts and feelings be different? Might he be more peaceful? Might he be able to be more present and fully engaged in other things while waiting for the outcome of the test? I would think so. I imagine that some of you may be on board about how this shift in perspective could be really helpful while waiting for the outcome of the test, particularly if the outcome is that he passes the test. I also imagine that it's a little bit more of a stretch for some of you to be on board with this idea if the outcome is that he actually failed. Let's examine his old belief system. What are the benefits of him believing that his future life's happiness is now compromised because he failed the test? Some people might say, well, he'll work harder to make sure that that doesn't happen. Couldn't he work hard even without that belief? And might it actually be easier if he wasn't really stressed out or disappointed or even depressed? I'm not convinced that holding that perspective is going to benefit or serve him in any way. It might serve him much better to believe that happiness is still available to him even though he failed the test. Meaning that failing the test doesn't actually have to impact or take away his happiness in any way. This, of course, wouldn't be very easy, particularly if you haven't been practicing this kind of perspective before. However, the more we're able to face situations being aware of our expectations and, more importantly, our attachments, and learning to hold these things lightly, the less we are impacted when the outcome doesn't turn out the way that we thought it needed to. So what would it look like to have peace and happiness in spite of failing a test? Part of that definitely comes from a deep inner sense of love. When we are able to cultivate unconditional love for ourselves, we can feel that no matter what is happening outside of us. The events that come and go in our lives are just the weather. Sometimes we have a bright, sunny day, and sometimes a horrible blizzard. But none of that touches what's inside. When you have unconditional love for yourself, the events that trigger joy and love or excitement are just the icing on the cake. And the events that cause us to feel anger, sadness, or anxiety are simply life lessons and challenges that help us to grow. these events no longer have to define us as a person. We don't have to get caught up in fear about what it will mean about who we are if a certain external circumstance doesn't turn out the way that we hoped. Because it doesn't mean anything. It never did. My teacher's teacher, Neem Karoli Baba, would say, "Everything is perfect." You might be thinking, no, it's not. Just look at all the things that's going on right now in the world, all these protests and counter-protests and people being very divided. Trust me when I say that I understand how this can be a very challenging perspective to adopt. But really, what it's suggesting is faith. How do I know that the evolution of the planet would go better if things were playing out according to my hopes or expectations? For all I know, the events that are occurring right now is exactly what's needed for us to progress in the way that will serve our greatest good. But we all like to think that we're right. We like to think that we're the ones that has it all figured out. And of course, some people will have humility in their perspective, but inside of ourselves, there's a part of us that's like, well, at least I know I got this part of it figured out. Maybe I don't have enough information because of lack of research or knowledge or experience in this area, but this part, no, like I've got this. And if the rest of the world would only see it the way that I see it and implement these ideas, then everything would get better. I think we all have things that we have that perspective about. And I think probably in some cases, some of us are actually right about that. There's probably enough diversity in opinions where somebody's perspective or opinion about a certain aspect of what's happening in the world right now is really the thing that would be the best way of approaching that situation. But we can't know that. The only way that we're going to find out is for time to pass. The idea that everything is perfect, again, comes from this faith that things happen for a reason. Now, I'm aware that some of you may not have that perspective about life. The idea does imply that there's some force, energy, or intelligence that holds the master plan. And that's a concept that many of us are not comfortable with. One of the things that I've learned to do when contemplating ideas like this is that I look at what beliefs, what perspectives best serve my well-being. And I try to worry less about what's definitively right or wrong, particularly because these are questions that we can't have answered during this life. At least at this point in time, there doesn't seem to be any technology that's going to allow anyone to definitively answer the question of whether or not there is some, again, energy, force, intelligence that exists beyond our day-to-day lives as we know them. I, too, was skeptical about adopting this perspective. As somebody who spent many years of my life with an empirical mindset, it was very difficult to come to the idea of faith as something that I could really see myself practicing in any real way. I decided to take an empirical approach to changing my mind. I thought, let me experiment with how this change in perspective might affect me on a day-to-day basis, affect my emotions, affect my inner peace. And I'll see what happens. Now, of course, I didn't have objective measurements as part of this process, but I did make efforts to note to myself how I was responding to events and whether or not those responses were different, and looked to see if any changes that I may have noticed seemed to be reliable. Here's what I actually did. When an event in life came up that was undesirable to me, I would typically start by having my knee-jerk emotional reaction, disappointment, frustration, anger, or whatever other uncomfortable emotional experience might have resulted from that. The important thing is what I would do next. Instead of rehearsing thoughts that reinforce that original emotional response or even added on to it by projecting forward into the future, I instead try to think of it from the perspective of everything is perfect. So I would ask myself, if this happened, how might this be good? How might this be the right thing? How might this be a helpful experience? What might this be teaching me? Just that shift in perspective already had an influence on how I was reacting to it. Thinking about it in that way meant that this could be a blessing. The circumstance that I was previously seeing as unfortunate and unwanted may have actually been a gift. Obviously, there are some circumstances where this is much harder to do than others, depending on how big the situation was or how previously attached I was. Let me share a specific example with you so you can see what I mean. Part of the process of getting a PhD in clinical psychology is that you have to complete what's called a clinical internship. Typically, the way that programs are designed, you have 4 years of classwork, including your dissertation and very often your master's thesis, comprehensive exams, etc. And then you do your internship in the 5th year of your training. As you might imagine, I just described a lot of things that you would need to complete in 4 years. And so the average in the program that I was in is that people would take 5 years to complete those basic requirements before applying to internship. When I was in graduate school, the program that I was in had historically done really well with the process of the internship match. You had to apply to programs all over the country, and we're competing with a lot of different trainees. Over the years, the percentage of people who do not match for an internship has increased to, I believe, somewhere around 20 to 25% presently. At the time that I was applying, the percentage of people who were not matching was maybe somewhere around 20%. I felt reasonably good about my chances, given that no one in my graduate program had been unsuccessful in the match process the entire time I had been there. I was a very conscientious and driven student, and so I was ready to apply for internship during my 4th year. I had already proposed my dissertation and would be defending it well before leaving for internship, which doesn't always happen. Because of how busy I was getting all of my coursework, qualifying exams, and dissertation proposal completed, I probably didn't spend as much time as would have benefited me researching the different internship sites that I applied to. I looked at what students in my lab had typically applied for, students in my program had typically applied for, and applied to many of them and a few others that I spent time researching myself. I ended up getting a smaller number of interviews than most people were typically being offered, and that began to make me nervous. On top of that, I wasn't in the best place emotionally and probably wasn't aware of that at the time, and so I'm sure that affected the impression that I created when I attended those interviews. As you might imagine with how this story is started, on match day, I discovered that I had not matched for internship. My initial response was to feel really sad, anxious, and even ashamed. I started to imagine having to face people in the department and tell them this news and the awkwardness and discomfort that would inevitably ensue in their reactions. People had been reassuring me what a strong student I was and saying that they were excited for me in the process. I knew that they would likely be very shocked. So in addition to dealing with sharing the news with everyone, including my family and friends, I also had to figure out what I was going to do. You can't complete your PhD until you've done a clinical internship. They have what's called a clearinghouse, where positions who are unable to match an intern post their openings, and you can apply after the original match process. I researched some of the options and ultimately decided that they were not a good fit for my training goals. Within 24 hours of receiving that initial news, I concluded that not matching to internship was actually a really great thing. As you might imagine, to complete all of that work in that 4-year time period meant that there was a lot of other things that I needed to sacrifice. And given that I was not in the best mood state at the time, a break was probably just what I needed. I decided that I would apply to work at an inpatient hospital that was an hour drive away that I previously didn't have the time to be able to do. I was also able to conduct a research study that was very interesting to me and had plenty of time to run the subjects myself. One of the things that was the best part of reframing that experience for me was realizing how many treasured relationships I had developed in the 4 years that I had been living there, and how moving away and matching to internship would mean moving on from all of those people. Being able to have another year, particularly when I had far fewer requirements of my time to enjoy those relationships and cultivate them, was really a blessing. Now, at the time, I did not have any faith. I had just learned a lot about the importance of reframing your experiences and trying to make lemonade out of lemons. I could have easily been upset about not matching for internship for days or weeks or even months. Actually, a friend of mine at the time said that she thought that I was repressing my real emotions because I bounced back from the event so quickly. I realized, though, that there was no value in beating myself up, feeling guilty, feeling ashamed. The situation was what it was, and there was nothing that I could do at that point to change what happened. The only thing that I could do was to change how I wanted to react to it and what I wanted to do moving forward. Now, in the long run, it actually turned out to my favor that I didn't match for internship that year. After I completed internship and was looking at the next phase of training, which is what's called your postdoctoral fellowship, the two positions that I was most interested in were 2-year positions and were not previously available the year before. I was very fortunate enough that when I applied to them, I was offered both positions and had my choice. And that fortunate turn of events later on was something I never could have anticipated at the time that I originally got what I felt was bad news. I see now what a blessing it was that things transpired that way. My beliefs that I needed to complete school in 5 years were not actually what was best for me. I don't know how I would have responded emotionally had I not had that time to connect with my friends and take care of myself. When I left for internship, I was in a much better place in regard to my mood and my physical health. My depression had gotten to the point where I was not engaging in exercise very much and did not feel very well. The reality is that when things in the moment happen, we don't see how it fits in with the big picture. We can't see the future and where this fits in the general story of our life. I imagine that there are many of you that are able to look back at events in your life that you perceived as misfortunes at the time and can see how that event benefited you in retrospect. Some people may say, well, you're just telling yourself nice stories, but that's not really the truth. I suppose that's possible. But that's exactly why I've come to focus more on what functions rather than what's right or wrong. If having a certain perspective makes me function better and feel better, I don't need to know the ultimate truth of it, particularly when there actually may be no way to know what the ultimate truth is. If we believe that everything is perfect, we're no longer victims. When things that we consider to be unfortunate occur, this isn't us being punished or having bad luck. Instead, it's a gift to promote our growth and well-being. I think that we suffer from the illusion that the goal is to be happy and content at all times. I would say that the goal is to evolve as much as we can as a person, and that many events that occur in our lives are aimed at that purpose. Of course, if you're attached to the perspective that your job is to try to feel as happy and content at all moments as possible, that attachment will cause you to experience much greater suffering when those unfortunate circumstances inevitably occur in your life. By thinking that everything is perfect, we're not inviting misfortune into our lives. We're not creating it by having an optimistic perspective about it. Instead, we're choosing a perspective that the ultimate force of the universe is kind and beneficent. That the things that occur serve the greatest good. And the things that happen to us serve our greatest good. Our job, then, when these things occur, is not to try to undo them. It's not to wish that they didn't occur. Our job instead is to learn from them as much as we can. And by finding those lessons, we're much less likely to have these events recur in order to teach them to us. The perspective that everything is perfect can help to give us peace, that even in our toughest moments, we are protected and guided through this process of life. It teaches us that our attachments are one of the only things that can hold us back from that peace. The more we hold on to our personal expectations and emotional attachments to things being the way that we believe that they should be, the more that we will suffer. The more that we can practice acceptance of things as they are and to find the lessons and the beauty of life as it unfolds, the more joy we will find through it all. So how can you take action on these ideas right now? I would encourage you to try out an experiment with this perspective of everything is perfect. It's probably easiest to start with really small things. An easy example of this would be to think of the next time someone cuts you off in traffic. Perhaps that event is there to teach you to manage your anger and to cultivate greater patience. Perhaps the disruption in your route was redirecting you from a potential accident further on down the road. Part of the challenge of having faith that everything is perfect means also accepting that we may not have answers as to why it's perfect all the time. In some cases, the reasons why something happened may not be known to us right away, or maybe even ever. But since this is a faith-based perspective, we're surrendering our need to know and understand everything. I believe that I've shared before that even the well-known astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson says, "The universe is under no obligation to make sense to you." Learning to tolerate the unknowns or uncertainties about life and filling that space with faith may serve us well. As always, I would love to hear how your experiments go. You can email me at Suzanne, which is Suzanne, at loveistheanswer.one. I want to express my deep gratitude to everyone who has been listening and to those of you who have chosen to subscribe. I so much appreciate you choosing to focus your time and attention on this podcast from time to time. If there's been a time that you've been listening to one of these episodes and you thought to yourself, oh, this would be so helpful for so-and-so, please consider sharing it to that person. It is my hope that the information that I'm providing here reaches the people who it will help the most. Until next time, wishing you all peace and love.